Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer recruiting experts. Now, here's your host, Chris Cousins.
Hi guys, Chris Cousins here from Sports Recruiting USA, and this is the Inside College Soccer Podcast. First of all, welcome to the new decade. This is our first episode that we've released, and it's great to welcome you back. It's been some time since we released an episode, so we've got a few things lined up. We've recorded a few things over the last couple of months, but yeah, it's been crazy time, so we're trying to get a few out to the masses now. So it's been awesome, some of the feedback we've been getting. There's a lot more people listening to this than we thought, so apologize, you got to listen to me, but I'll keep this short and sweet. So yeah, today's episode is another good one. We have Tony Mohammed of BlackRock FC. If you've never heard of it, it's a residential academy in the States, and they also have a USL League Two side. There's a lot of players that have come through the system, turned professional, gone on to big schools in the States and beyond. I came across Tony just through Jack Harrison, who's now at Leeds United. I know he went through that academy for a little bit and kind of had some sort of connection with them, so yeah, that's where I first found out about them. So I got talking to Tony, working on a few things, and then I invited him on to tell you about his career, himself, and a lot about the program and what they do, and a few other things as well about college soccer and whatnot. So we're joined on this podcast by Don Williams, my colleague in the US. He's called in, so the sound's not great, but it's definitely listenable. So yeah, if any of you guys have a spare minute or two on your phones, if you want to find us on social media and give us a follow, that'd be awesome. We're on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything really. Just look for Sports Recruiting USA, SIUSA. So yeah, that's it. So let's get straight into it. This is Tony Mohammed of BlackRock FC, and this is the Inside College Soccer Podcast. Tony, thanks for coming on. Why don't you just give us a little bit of background about yourself? As Don always says, tell us about the journey you've been on, and just share with the listeners.
Yeah, well, I guess first, thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm obviously really grateful for the opportunity to sort of share the story of BlackRock and even my journey to the U.S. and how I got here. So, you know, I guess just on a personal level, I started in the game pretty young. I grew up in a suburb of Toronto playing the game. I was a three-sport athlete growing up in high school, at least anyway. I was involved with basketball and volleyball, which is not a typical sport in this country, but it's a big sport in Canada. And I was fortunate enough to get tied into the Ontario Player Development Program, which is a arm of the Canadian, national setup. And so I was in that program for 3 years, played in the Canada Games, which is like the precursor to the Olympic team, and you know, was getting looked at as one of the top talents in the country, I guess, so to speak. And so I was recruited at an early age, looked at a couple different options, but really with no kind of guidance, honestly. You know, my parents and I were doing everything for the first time, and so I looked at, you know, some bigger state schools, some smaller schools, you know, high level soccer, academic, and ultimately landed at Kenyon College, which is in rural Ohio. Not a destination that I thought I would get to, but had an unbelievable college experience. You know, we played in a Final Four my freshman year, hosted the national championship my senior year. We didn't win a national championship, but we played in two, so that was something.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was good fun for sure. Lots of fond memories of obviously my academic experience, but from a soccer perspective as well. And then, from there, I had some student loans to pay off, so had some help from my parents, but got that taken care of, and then launched into a coaching career, which I was, fortunate to get to some of the best schools in the country at the Division III level, which is obviously my experience. So.
Why did you, sorry to interrupt you there, why did you start coaching just as an interest, personal interest?
Yeah, I did have an option to go to Ireland after my senior year. And I mentioned we hosted the national championship. We actually lost the national championship in the fourth overtime before penalties. And I don't know if you remember, Don, but back then they did, regulation overtime and then golden goal, 2 5-minute golden goal overtime periods. This is back in 96. So with 6 seconds left on the clock, there was a scramble in front of the goal and they managed to pull one in. College New Jersey put one in on us. So that's how my college career ended.
Hey, Tony, we can go back and visit this if you want, but I'd be fascinated how a guy from Canada ends up at a D3 school in Ohio. Yeah. How'd that even happen?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I said, for as a Canadian, and I think this is Chris, you do a lot of work internationally. The Canadians, generally speaking, aren't as informed as they could be on the college process in the U.S. And you think it's so close, it's, they share a border, the Canadians would be up on it. But it's fascinating to me that more and more Canadians aren't familiar with the process. And so the work I'm doing now, even, while I was in the college game, I was always trying to get home to educate communities on how to get here, things to do, timelines, things like that. So it's just one of those things where it was by chance, really. I was at the Capital Cup down in D.C., we actually didn't get into the draw. We weren't in a bracket, but our coach had a couple of connections down there and said, hey, let's go down there. There's a ton of coaches. Back then, it was one of the bigger tournaments, I think, on the East Coast for sure. And so we played just, friendlies with teams who were looking to pick up extra games. And Fran O'Leary, who's now at UMass Amherst, had just done his first year at Kenyon, had a pretty good year. And so he recruited me down there and he's like, well, it's a small school, but you're going to play in a significant role as a freshman. We think we're going to, be competitive for a national championship. And those are all things that were exciting to me. The bigger schools that I looked at, they were saying, as a sophomore maybe, or, we'll bring you on partial money and see how you do. So nothing was really, captivating to me and saying this feels right. And so I took my official visit at Kenyon, unbelievable campus in the middle of nowhere. But the campus was gorgeous. It was a small community. I think it was like 12 or 14 students per class. So it was a very rich, educational experience. That's something that resonated with me. I think what it was described to me as my role in the soccer team was significant. And so all those things were appealing to me. And so that's how I ended up there. And, back then, Division III soccer, it wasn't probably as strong as it was top to bottom these days. But for us, we were, in and out of the top 10, top 20, all four years that I was there. The 1 year, I think it was our sophomore year, Ohio Wesleyan, who was our big rival, went on to win the national championship. So we were relevant on the national level, which was important to me. And so I really, going into it, I educated myself on what the experience was going to be like. And I was very happy with it. And so yeah, that's how I ended up, of all places, rural Ohio.
Cool. Yeah, no, because Kenyon's strong. And they're still strong. I mean, Chris Brown's been there, I don't know, 14, 15 years, something like that.
And yeah.
They're still one of the top teams in the country.
Yeah, he's built it back up. It's, they have, I think, 8 BlackRock players with them now. So they've gotten some help from some alumni who are still involved with the game. But he's done a great job, and they just built a $40 million facility. I think it was a couple of years ago now. So we had our teams travel down. Our BlackRock Residential Academy at Northwood School went down, did a road trip there, got to play on the new field, and they were all blown away. I always make the claim, I was part of building that. Like, yeah, cool, sure.
Shall we use that as a segue and kind of, obviously, we're kind of jumping a few stages, but explain what BlackRock is, because I know what it is, and Don does, and I'm sure some people don't. I know you. It's not easy to explain sometimes, but yeah, can you give us some information about it?
Yeah, I guess just as a brief history, the club was founded by John Moody, who was a college teammate of mine. So we were at Kenyon together for 4 years. I knew him when he had a full head of hair and was fit back then, but fast forward 19 years, he was in the prep school game, a residential boarding school game for a period of time. Had a great run at Berkshire School over 11 years there. Won 3 New England championships, which is the highest standard on the East Coast. They were ranked number 1 in the country. He won something like 94 games in that time. and was producing some pretty high level players. And, you know, the traditional residential boarding school, or I'll call it prep school from here, basically what they do is they make you transition by sport per season. So in New England, they play their soccer or their football in the fall. And then if you go there, then in the winter, they'll ask you to do strength and conditioning or basketball or hockey or squash. And then in the spring, you'll play tennis, golf, or track and field is what most of the guys end up doing. But if you're a high-level player, you know, with a specialization happening domestically and, you know, for kids abroad who are just soccer crazy, to tell a kid after American Thanksgiving, hey, you can hang up your boots and we'll pick up again in the fall, they'd be like, you're crazy. So John, you know, the kids were asking for more, and John is very industrious and said, okay, well, how can I make this work? There's rules that don't allow the coaches to work with players outside of their primary season. So he partnered back then with Manhattan SC, and, you know, had a coach come in to work with the guys. They put together essentially what was an all-star team and started to play some scrimmages, and that's how it really started. So it was like two or three schools with kids who were passionate about the game who wanted to play. It was really like Sunday soccer. They just got together and, you know, trained a little bit and then started picking up some games. So that was, you know, I guess formally came together 2013. And then that winter of 13, IMG called, and, you know, they heard about Berkshire School and John and kind of the team that he was building up there, and said, hey, we just had a team drop out of the super group. Can you bring the Berkshire team down? And John's like, well, no, there's crazy rules. The league would never allow it, but I do have this little club that we work with. We might be able to figure that out. And so he said, well, you know, let's make it happen. So John immediately picked up the phone, started calling parents. You know, they had, you know, cotton t-shirts, and, you know, had parents donate some money, kids kicked in, and they rolled in there really with really no real history at all. And they played Maccabiah, they played a couple, who else did they play? I want to say Brentford, but I'm not sure if that's true, Chris. They definitely played a team from England. Anyway, they won their group, and then they advanced to the final. They end up losing to Tottenham, you know, their proper academy, 2-1 in overtime.
Is this the group that Jack Harrison was involved in?
Yeah. Jack Harrison hit the crossbar on a free kick, you know, in overtime. Yeah. Bounce off the line, typical of England, right? They can't get it across the line. but yeah, if that goal goes in, they would have won the U19 Super Group. So that was really the launching point and sort of the impetus to what we're doing now. Again, you know, it was 2016. John basically, you know, stepped away from Berkshire School and residential boarding school life to focus on the club full time and really give it the attention that it needed to grow it out to be, you know, further developed. And at that time, I was looking for a transition out of the college game. So he recruited me in. I was at Berkshire School. We won the New England Championship, you know, and I was like, all right, I'm good with that. But the club just continued to grow. And so John's like, look, Tony, I can't do this by myself. I'd really love for you to come join me and let's grow this together. So I did that. And so since then, you know, that year he did it on his own. Instead of one team, there's two teams. They partnered with GPS based out of Boston so they can get into a league because they didn't have a full complement of teams to get into a league. So they did that. They competed in the Connecticut State Cup. The teams won the league. They won the State Cup. They had a good run at Nationals. And so he's like, you know what? This is, you know, we're going to the Cape to play a game that, you know, they're blowing teams out. And it wasn't making a lot of logistical sense. So he said, you know what? Let's leave the league. We'll go independent. We'll expand it to more area prep schools, and we'll create regions that they can train within during the week, and then we'll bring them together and have them play against each other. So that was the first sort of the first go of our model that we're into now. And at the time we went from, you know, four schools to, I think it was 12 in the first year. And then it just continued to grow from there. So now we're into 40 different schools that we would call our partners, where the best kids are playing with us in their off season. So in the winter and spring, we take them out to different college showcases all over the country. They've been to Dallas Cup, they've been to Vegas, you know, Jefferson Cup, events like that. And then 2 years ago, and stop me if I'm getting boring here, guys.
But no,
years
ago,
we were approached by a couple of schools to go to what we call our residential academy model. Basically, what they were looking for were ways of bringing more global presence to their campuses and obviously having a standout soccer program. And, they go hand in hand, really, because soccer or football is a global game. Northwood School came to us. There's a lot of connections there with Berkshire School. The current head of school was a Berkshire head of school prior. I actually hired John Moody previously, so he brought us up and said, well, what will it take to get a residential model done here? What would it look like? You know, how much time do you need? So we said, look, we need 18 months. Here's what we need. This is what it's going to look like. Here's what our goals are. And he said, okay, let's do it. So we launched into that 2 years ago. We opened the first residential academy at Northwood School last August. We had a 19s team and a U17s team. So we aligned ourselves like a DA academy. At the time, we had over 20 countries represented, including the U.S. I think there was 5 states in the U.S. represented there, and had a fantastic year. And so how is it different than the traditional boarding school model, the prep school model? Instead of transitioning by season, you basically play football for 10 months a year, all through the seasons, 5 days a week, training, travel for games, that type of thing. So so you could say that it's like the DA academies that have the residential model. When you think about the Philadelphia Union, I think the Whitecaps have one as well. So it's similar to that. The difference in between the DA and what we're doing is that we play the residential boarding schools in the fall, and then after Thanksgiving they swap over their uniforms and they play a club schedule. So this year, for example, they played in the IMG Cup. They'll be down in Philadelphia. They'll play against the Union in 2 weeks, and then we'll go to the Las Vegas showcase, the player showcase, and then finish off the year with the Dallas Cup, and the goal is to win the Dallas Cup. So
they'll be wearing Black Rock FC uniforms, yeah?
That's correct, yeah. Once the fall season's over where they're playing as Northwood School.
Northwood School to Black Rock, just clarifying that.
Exactly right, yeah. And so what we do in the fall is we line ourselves up more like a traditional prep school where we have mixed age groups. So we'll have 2 teams, and then we'll play a prep school schedule, and then like I said, once Thanksgiving's done, they come back, and then it's the same players are just now wearing Black Rock uniforms. And this year we're aligned as a U19s and a U18s just based on the kids that we have. So
it's such an obvious model, really. but it's like unique as well, because not many people do it. So like when I heard about this, when we connected like a year ago, whatever it was, and I'd obviously seen a few things about Black Rock in the past, and then Jack Harrison connection and stuff like that, but I was just like, oh yeah, that kind of makes like complete sense, just kind of having this club attached to the prep schools, and you've got like it's like basically 2 clubs in one, and obviously the revenue and stuff comes from whatever, but yeah, I think it's really good for people from all over the world to come to something like that in the States. It's kind of missing something like that, and obviously you filled that void.
Yeah, well, there's a handful of residential academies that,
yeah, I understand that
the same way. Yeah, I think where we're unique, I can't speak to all the other ones out there, but I think where we're unique, or where we've sort of distinguished ourselves, is that we take a very personalized approach in working with the kids that we have. And, we're not caught up or have the pressure of saying we have to send all our kids to D1. John and I are D3 guys, so we know what that experience is like, and the benefits of being in an environment like that. And so we're very, small, I guess, in that we have 36 kids at Northwood. Our second residential academy at High Mowing has a boys program and our first girls program. So we're smaller in that we 2 teams is where we would cap it. And then, our goal is to get them to the best school universities for football and education, or both. And so, we have 3 players who've come through Yale. They just won the Ivy League title for the first time since 1980 this year. We've had 4 players go through Dartmouth. We have our first boy at Stanford. UNC will have 4 guys. you know, Jack went to Wake Forest. Achara just won a national championship at Georgetown. So the list goes on and on and on. But if you look at our the schools that our kids are matriculating to, you know, I would argue that it's the best of the best when you think about the academic experience and even their football experiences.
I know that Don's trying to desperately jump in here. I apologize, Don. Just let me finish this. I can. Maybe he's not.
I'm scribbling notes, boys.
Yeah. No. So James Dawes, who works for us, is obviously not on this call, but he sent me some like notes earlier on. He did a little bit of independent research and stuff like that, and he was just saying because he's kind of like that our guy in the company that keeps an eye on all the current college players in terms of like that not with our company, just in general. And he goes, I can't believe how many have come through Black Rock, and he was like, he named like the Achara, the Georgetown guy, the Stanford kid, is it Buda?
Yeah.
And then you've obviously got Jack, and then there's is it Jacob Schaffelberg?
Schaffelberg, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But so he the question he had for me to ask you, he goes, how have you done it? Like, why has it been so successful? Like, not giving the trick away of like to give to other people, but why have you got so many good players coming through? I mean, we're a recruiting agency and we get good players through, don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
you seem to be doing it consistently all the time, and obviously the reputation stuff. But yeah, tell me what you think.
Yeah, well, I won't give away too many of our trade secrets.
Yeah, of course. I understand that.
No, I think we're
not recording. It's fine. I'm joking.
Yeah, right. I think the big thing for us is, you know, and again, we were talking previously, Don, about the college lifestyle is, you know, you get to these U.S.-based events. Like if you think about the Surf Cup, there's, I don't even know how many teams, you know, it's a massive tournament, 400 teams in an age group. Potentially, you know, the Dallas Cup, even the events that we go to, they're huge. And you could be one of 50 or 60 coaches watching a game. And, it's really easy to pick out the best player on the field and everybody's chasing them. And so then you're battling for the same kids. And I think for John and even for me, you know, we like to go a bit off the beaten path or really far off the beaten path and find kids that we see potential in. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for the environment that they're in when they get to us as well. You know, Jacob, you know, when he came to us as a freshman, he would have been, you know, if he'd stayed where he was, he would have been the best kid in his community until he left for university. And so is he really challenged in a way that is bringing out the best in him along his journey? You know, the thing about the residential boarding school model is because it's mixed age groups, if you bring in the best U14s and have them playing with the best U16, U17s, you know, physically they may not necessarily be able to keep up, but they're going to be forced to play quicker and, you know, their touch has to be cleaner or, they have to find themselves in spaces that allow them more time, and you know, so they're challenged every day to be better, and there's no room for you to sort of, you know, sit back and say, okay, I'm good. And so that's just from the footballing perspective. But then, you know, as far as their daily life is concerned, you know, and this is where I think when you talk about Black Rock's model and how we're unique, I think, you know, when you think about a domestic player who's in a club, you know, elite club structure, living at home, going to their local public school, they're with their coach for two hours a day, twice a week, and then they travel for a game on the weekend. And so much of it is focused on the football and how they're developing and what they're working on, systems of play and, you know, set pieces or what have you. And then it's all right, I'll see you next time. And then when they're at the school, they're talking to their teachers or their guidance counselor about your college choices and how are you doing in school. But there's really no connection always necessarily where those two things combine themselves. And so we have the unique opportunity to really touch every aspect of a kid's life and have them be accountable to that. And so, you know, we've had kids who haven't traveled because they haven't, you know, turned in a paper on time or they had a disciplinary thing, and it's like, all right, you're not traveling this weekend because, you know, you get your problem sets done for your math class, or, you know, your assignment was late, or, you know, you got points because your room wasn't clean or you turned up late. And so, you know, and then again, of course, we're living away from home, so you're accountable for every action or decision that you make. And so, So to answer your question, when you think about Schaffelberg and Achara and Prosper, you know, the guys who come through our program who have gone on to have great success, I think would say that their football education was unique in that they weren't the big fish in a small pond. They were challenged every day and, you know, were led by guys who were older than them and who were showing them about how to do things the right way. But their communities, the schools that they were living in, they were forced to and challenged to be at their best academically and, you know, to take on leadership roles on campus, whether it's being a prefect or singing an a cappella group or leading tours or, you know, student government, those types of things. And, you know, for us too, you know, we're firm believers that, you know, you should take advantage of the opportunities you're given. If you have interests outside of soccer, you should explore that. And so two of the best examples I can give you, last year at Northwood, we had Sean Kwakwa from South Africa, who, you know, if you met him on the first day, he'd say, you know, I'm a left back, you know, I'm pretty fast and I'm good on the ball and I like to get forward. And we said to him, like, Sean, you know, don't narrowly define yourself as a soccer player. You've got much more to offer the world than just being a left back. And so he was the lead in their winter musical. So that kid was singing and dancing in front of 200 in front of people in the community theater. And you might say, well, that's crazy. Why would you do that? But, you know, that kid's showing vulnerability. He's showing passion and interest outside of the game and contributing to a community a different way, you know, connecting with a different peer group. And you've started
your own actors talent agency. When he's the first one, right?
Yeah. Well, Anajay Aswood, who's from Bermuda, took winter mountaineering, and so he had crampons, and he's climbing an ice face. And so I can say that we're the first to ever produce the Bermuda's first ice climber. You know, so. But there's something to be said for those experiences, because, you know, they shape who you are. But, you know, you get to do things. You know, you learn to lead, you learn to follow, you learn things about yourself. And we believe that those things all add up to making stronger footballers with strong character. And so I think, getting back to your question, is how is it possible? I think it's a bit is obviously selecting, you know, talent that we see potential in, but also cultivating that in a way that's unique and I think allows them to have success at the highest level. So.
And what I love about that, Tony, is you know, we always told our son when he was growing up, I mean, at 10 years old, he said he wanted to play in England, right? And then ended up going over there. My wife and I would have these private conversations that, boy, what if he doesn't make it? This kid's going to be crushed. So we constantly reminded him, football's something you do. It's not who you are.
Right.
It's not who you are. And it sounds like that's the approach that you guys are taking, which is frankly refreshing in youth development to expound upon who the person is, not just their soccer footballing abilities. Yeah.
I'm going to flip that though and ask Tony like a question. So all these players that have come through, there's been a number now of turned professional and stuff like that. And it's not about turning professional. It's about having a good time and getting a good experience and whatnot. But what do you see in the players like that do eventually, like for example, with Jack Harrison, I know what happened in England with him and obviously he's doing really, really well. You've got the other players. What did you see in them sort of players that are different to everyone else? And sorry, it's a kind of like a coaches like type question or whatever. It's a very cliche question, but I'm interested to know from your players' point of view, what you saw them in your program, what do they do different, if anything?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we say to all of our kids on day one is, you know, give us everything and we'll give everything to you. And I think, obviously, I didn't get to work with Jack when he came.
Yeah, I understand that.
But if you look at who he is now, I mean, obviously, his rise was so fast. And I think a lot of it, if you look at his characteristics, he's a hardworking player. He's very humble. And I think those two things by themselves, you know, go a long way. You know, he's very coachable. He's always interested in learning. And again, when you think about the environments that they're in, they're offered so much as far as the experience goes. And so I think what we're looking for, truthfully, anytime we're out evaluating, we were in 24 countries in 24 months, something crazy like that. In lead up to Northwood and high mowing, was, you know, first you have to have soccer ability. You have to stand out amongst your peers and bring something special to the game. You have to have a passion for, you know, passion. You have to be interested in your academics and that it's not just an afterthought. And then the third, and I think arguably the most important, is character, which is, you know, it's cliche, but, you know, who are you in your community? You know, how do your teachers talk about you? How would your, you know, the people at the church or, you know, talk about you? You know, how would your parents describe you? How would your siblings describe you? Those are all really key indicators to us in saying this is a kid that could do well in our environment. And so, you know, there's kids that we pass on who don't have the academics to do it, or they don't have the character to do it. I mean, you know, soccer, like I said, you can find the best player wherever you go. But for us and what we're looking for is they have to have all three. And so we don't compromise on that. We can be as selective as we need to be. And, you know, I can't say that we, you know, all of our kids, I think, do very well once they're with us. There's, you know, there's the odd occasion where a kid may not be as interested academically than we thought they would be, or, you know, behavioral things come up and what have you. So, you know, we don't always get it perfect, but I think, you know, based on the success that we've had, I think that we've done, you know, quite well in the short period of time that we've been around. And like I said, it's not just about football.
No, I mean, that answered the question. It's just, so it's interesting from a specific point of view. It's easy when you hear like the generic, like, here's the type of people I turn professional, and it's obviously just talking generically, but for you guys, like you say, you've got very specific things as well. So Don, do you want to add anything to that? Anything?
Yeah. You know what? I'm really curious, going back to how you select players to come into the club. Obviously you can't help every kid who wants to come, or, and every kid maybe that you identify isn't the right fit. So what are you looking for in the players that come in, besides the footballing ability? That part's probably speaks for itself. But what are you looking for when you see a family, when you talk to a family, talk to a kid? Are kids coming to you from around the world? Are you going to those kids? And then what kind of conversations are you having to determine if they belong at BlackRock?
Yeah, well, I would say our vetting process is pretty rigorous in that, you know, we do have a ton of kids who are reaching out to us and saying we want to be a part of your program. And so we entertain a lot of conversations like that. We work with, you know, over 20 different international partners to, you know, that they're bringing through their process as well. And so that's really, you know, the two ways that we identify players for our program. But yeah, I think, you know, understanding the family, their values, what their goals are, what their objectives are really important. You know, we have families that come to us and say, oh, my son wants to come to the US to be a pro. And so, you know, is that a family we want to work with? Well, you know, if you ask any one of our kids if they want to be pros, every hand would go up. But the answer that we always give them is like, we don't decide who's going to be a pro. We don't decide who's going to go D1. What we decide is, you know, is this a kid that has the potential to have success in our program? And, you know, ultimately for any prep school or boarding school, we have to place them once they graduate. And so, you know, if you don't have the academics coming in, can you make up that ground while you're with us? If you come in as a freshman, the answer is probably yes. But if you're coming as a junior, the answer is probably no. And so that's, you know, another nuance to our program is that not every kid comes through for 4 years. I would say the most successful kids, you know, the kids who've had the most success at the next level have been 4-year players. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have only 2 years to work with the kid. And so, you know, you have to be, you know, pretty close to a finished product coming in if it's such a short window. And so, yeah, understanding what their goals and objectives are and making sure that they're genuine and what their, you know, what their expectations are and what they hope for their kids. And I think, you know, globally, in my opinion, at least anyway, the US is the only place where you can play high level football and still get an education. You know, I think, and, you know, Chris, you can speak to this, in most places in Europe, you know, you're choosing one or the other at a pretty early age. And so, it's appealing for families who are academically focused and want that for their kids. You know, the agents that we talk to and work with, you know, see it as a safer pathway for the kids that they're working with. Because at 18, they can decide you're good enough to be a pro. If not, then we'll get them to a school and guarantee an education for them. And so they'll still, you know, have options in life after football. So,
And where do finances fall into it? So if you find an amazing player who's a 4.0 GPA as a freshman and he comes in, but, you know, mom and dad are maybe first generation in the United States struggling, how does all of that play into, you know, the structure of the club?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I guess specifically to the football side, you know, we only have so many room for left backs in our program. So there is something to be said about the makeup of the team. How old are the players? What positions do they play? But beyond that, you know, we try to find opportunities for any kid that we believe in. Of course, you know, the kids who come with very limited means or no means, it's much harder to take on, you know, a lot of them at any one period of time. So there may be a situation where we find a kid and say, like, we don't have room for you this year. You know, let's look at next year. Or we don't have room in this program, but here's our second residential academy. If that doesn't work out, here's one of our 40 partner schools that we work with who would love to have you. And so, you know, some of it depends on, you know, if there's a kid who's from Hong Kong who's really keen to come just to get to the U.S. as a early entry point to the American school system and just wants an experience, then, and they have straight A's, then there's a handful of schools that we work with that we could, you know, bring them, introduce them to and find a home. You know, for the top talent who, you know, who have great grades and, you know, are showing the most promise, we want to find them a place in one of our two residential academies. And so a bit of it is, you know, like I said, specific to their, profile and a bit about timing. And so, we do try to make it as accessible as we can to as many kids, you know, regardless of your socioeconomic background, that type of thing. And then once they're with us, you know, we do as much as we can to provide opportunity. You know, last year we gave out almost $250,000 in financial aid because we are a pay to play model within our, what we call our prep academy. So that's for the 40 partner schools. And so, you know, I rent my condo. I don't own a house, and I got a lease payment on my car that's racking up miles traveling all over the place. So it's really just about providing as much opportunity to kids as we can. But of course, we're limited in resources or our reach to do that. So
you've got some pretty good, is it 40, do you say 48, like, prep schools you work with, or do you say 40? Sorry, how many was it?
It's about 40 schools. Yeah, we just came online to a new region just north of Boston called the Lakes Region.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, Exeter, Andover, Kimball Union, Hodgkiss School, or excuse me, Holderness School. So schools like that as well.
So you've got quite a few, like, basically a player comes to you, you've got a lot of options for them to kind of answer that question that they have. Like, cause usually most people just have, like, for example, I mean, I've worked with, like, give you an example. Like, I worked with a USL2 club, PDL at the time in Florida, just one club recruiting for them, and kind of had, we had a certain amount of spaces, and it was a lot of no's and a couple of yeses, but it sounds like you've probably got not an answer for everyone, but it gives you a bit more freedom, and it's good. It's good you can kind of help a lot more people, point them in the right direction. Is that right in what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think for us, you know, of course we're heavy on the international, you know, as far as our recruiting goes. And I think part of that is because the US landscape is so developed, and, you know, does a kid find this, you know, this experience is a better opportunity from where they are? Sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes the answer is no, but that's okay. But yeah, I think, you know, for us, we want to grow, do our part to grow the game in this country. And if that's for an international kid or a domestic kid, we're not, you know, it doesn't hold anyone back in that regard. But yeah, if we see a kid that we see that has the passion and the drive to do it, then we can likely find a place for them, and we'll do what we can to make that work.
So do you keep a good eye on the college game then? Just because of like, you've got, naturally you'll see some of your players move on, and even just the time you've been there, there's got to be a number of players playing D3, D2, D1, NAIA, whatever. But do you keep a good eye on the college game at all?
Of course, yeah. That's part of our success story is to point to kids who are in the game and what they're doing for sure.
What do you think of the 10-month model thing, 2-semester model?
Yeah, you know, I heard you ask Bobby Clark this question.
Oh, so you listened to that one.
his answer did surprise me, and I just had this conversation with a couple of my friends who are still in the college game. And I think to Bobby's point, it will raise the question on, you know, will schools continue to support soccer if they go to 10 months model? Because there's lots of questions about, you know, money and facilities. And
rightly so as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And so it may come to a place where some schools decide to do it and some don't, or there's going to be a separation between Division One and Division Two and Division Three. And so there'll be, you know, a line that will further separate Division Three potentially from Division Two and Division One, which wouldn't necessarily be a good thing, but maybe it would. I don't know. I mean, I think for me, being a college athlete, it was very demanding physically, mentally, emotionally. I mean, you get yourself up for two games. I mean, the national championship, you know, the senior year, we played the semifinal to overtime and the final less than 24 hours later. So
it's crazy, right?
It's crazy. And, you know, if you're talking about development, which I think is really the point that we want to get to, is the current model structured in a way that allows players to develop? And I think with the rise of MLS academies, the DA, you know, and how that's going, you know, specialization of youth players is, you know, come and gone. It's still going and only seems to be, you know, going that way even more these days. You know, how does the college game remain relevant in the landscape of development, or even being a destination that the players want to be a part of? And to me, you know, 10 months makes the most sense, but, you know,
that's with the finances out of the equation, right? I understand. Right. Yeah. I mean, everyone would probably answer the question apart from Bobby Clark by the sounds of it. That, yeah. if you actually listen to the full conversation we had with him, he actually, obviously the finances is a major part of it, and saying like, look, you're going to drive some schools to say like, no, we're not going to do soccer anymore. But he actually talked about like, he actually enjoyed the spring season because players had no they had no expectations really. They just kind of played for the places for the fall, and he had that time to experiment and do stuff like that. So I listened to it and I was like, I interviewed him, and he kind of swayed me a little bit. I was like, oh God, I think I'm with Bobby. Then more I think of it, I'm like, it just has to go to the full 2-semester thing.
Well, I mean, as long as you can manage the, you know, the training volume in a way that's appropriate, I think it does make a lot of sense.
Do you think it'll affect the USL League 2 club in the summer? Because a lot of schools are going to be like, hey, we don't want a kid playing in the summer now.
Oh, we've already got that. I mean, I talked to Mike Noonan at Clemson, and he said, you know,
Yeah,
he says, you know, if they're going to play USL, they can only play half the games or limited to X amount of minutes a game, you know, and so they're already, you know, hedging on how much they want their kids involved because they don't want to come back injured.
They always have done that.
So, yeah, but definitely I think that it could certainly impact the USL2 structure for sure. But, you know, the other thing is for a Division III athlete, a lot of times the spring you can do a semester abroad, or, you know, if you're heavy in the sciences, you pick up an extra lab or what have you. So there's definitely, you know, repercussions to that if it goes that way. And, you know, I think Bobby's right too. The spring, it's a little bit more relaxed. It's a little bit toned down. You can, you know, I think when you're always under pressure, it doesn't always allow you to, you know, express yourself in the same way and, you know, play different positions or, you know, tinker with things. And so, if you don't have those opportunities, it does make it harder. But I don't know. It is an interesting conversation. I'll be interested to see what the outcome would be for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's going to happen, but I think I think it has to happen eventually, no matter what, if it's this year or in a few years from now. People are going to push and push and push. So we'll
see. In the grand scheme of things too, soccer is not a revenue generating sport.
Yeah, I know. That's the big thing.
You know, football and basketball. And so now you're saying, well, you're going to double your allocation to soccer every year. You know, I don't know.
Like, why would they do it? Like, apart from all these, like, let's call ourselves soccer nerds who like, yeah. it needs to be 10 yeah. months because that's a development time that everyone needs. But then the school's like, but you bring in zero money from us. Like most schools like have like small, like if any, like obviously the lower down you get and stuff, but like yeah. small crowds, but then the money's made with the football, American football and basketball. And it's just yeah. like, yeah, I mean, how is that? I mean, the ADs are going to be, it's down right. to them. leave that conversation with them. But Don, yeah. do you have any sort of input on this?
You know what a funny thing is I agree with Bobby. I mean, I think back of all my 23 years of springs in college, and this was the time, and we would tell the kids, you're probably going to work harder in the spring because now we can crush you in the weight room. We can crush you in the fitness test. I don't have to periodize my season out so that, you know, like really during the season, when are you supposed to do fitness and weights if you're trying to, right. you know, let your players recover? There's no time in a schedule when you're preparing for your next opponent, and it's more team tactics really than anything.
Yeah, but professional clubs in the rest of the world. Sorry, Don, but professional clubs in the rest of the world, U23 level. Let's call the college level U23 level. Like they manage to do that. They manage to spread everything out and do everything.
Yeah, and to have it spread out like that, the season, on the other hand, would give you days that you could do certain things. But I really liked in the spring being able to focus on individual skills with individuals and really focus on that. Remember that, you know, a lot of the clubs around the world have larger staffs at the pro level to work with them. Heck, I have literally been a head coach of a college where there was 1.5 staff members, you know, me running both teams, right? And then one assistant coach and their young assistants. And so what you can really do with those players during the season, you're limited. You're very limited. So I don't know. That's it's going to be an interesting next couple of years to see where this goes.
Yeah, where do you see BlackRock going in the next few years? Like, obviously, the college game's changing, the club game's changing as well, like all the DA stuff and whatnot. But how do you see 10 years from now, obviously, get Magic Ball out, the Magic 8 Ball? Like, what do you think will happen?
Yeah, I think we're at an interesting place now where, I mean, and again, we often talk about ourselves in business terms. You know, we're still at a startup. You know, we're really year three, year four into what we're doing. And so we actually deliberately slowed ourselves down. You know, John and I are like, we can't open another residential academy. It's just not sustainable. Like, my kids don't recognize me. You know, it's the wives aren't happy. So we deliberately slowed ourselves down in a way just to give ourselves some breathing room, but also to make sure that we weren't compromising on our standards. Because I think if you grow too quickly, no matter what you're doing, you know, standards start to slip or you compromise things just based on timing. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, with what we had, we were delivering on what we promised and still getting the outcomes that we wanted. And so, you know, the next 10 years, you know, I think there's a lot of things in play. There's conversations about, you know, opening our own school instead of partnering with the school, which could be an interesting you know, if you have a blank canvas, what does it look like and how would it be different? So that's something that we've talked about. There's conversations about a pro club, whether that's domestically or abroad, as a continuation of our pathway for the kids who are good enough to turn pro at 18. Can we put them in an environment that, you know, allows them to showcase their talents to larger clubs potentially? We're talking about, you know, expanding on our international opportunities, and instead of just bringing kids inbound, can we, you know, send kids abroad for extended periods of time so they can get, you know, a global perspective of the game that'll bring something different to their own development. So I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a tipping point, but we've taken time to reflect a little bit and think about that but I think along the way, what we know is, you know, who we are and what remains true today and what we focus on is, you know, not just football. It's really about, you know, growing young people and providing opportunities to find success, whether it's on the football field or beyond.
I think it's Don.
Do you see the pyramid getting any taller than USL 2 possibly inside your structure of the club?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about potentially a USL championship team. I don't know if MLS is within reach right now, but we've talked about that as a potential pathway, or like I said, a pro club, whether that be if it's a USL championship, you know, based on the current structure or something, a club abroad. So, you know, Helsingør is interesting in that, you know, we could see that as something that we would want for ourselves rather than, you know, partnering with them. It's an amazing project, you know, that I think they're onto something there as far as, you know, what it could mean for domestic players abroad. So
it's a lot of stress there.
Definitely there. You're bringing it in. You know, it's funny. I was at Players Showcase last year, right?
Yeah.
And you know how it is, right? They're just so big, Tony, so many fields, and I'm running around and scouting and find a player here. About, I don't know, day two, I talk to a college coach, hey, have you ever seen this BlackRock team? And I said, no, I haven't yet. And I think by day three, I think almost every male college coach was standing around the sidelines watching your team.
Yeah.
And we were commenting at how some of these boys, they're not boys, they're men. We've got some phenomenal athleticism and athletic talent. And I literally think probably three quarters of all of the male college coaches by the end of the tournament were watching your side. So, it's not like you guys aren't bringing in talent. It's and you're bringing in some top level talent. And man, I could see a future where you guys could possibly, you know, develop some upper level teams. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, our USL 2, again, going into year 3 now, we had great success in our first year. You know, we won our division as a first year, which is, I don't know if it's the first time it's ever happened, but it's certainly one of the first times it's ever happened, and had a great run, and, you know, have 4 players sign pro contracts since then. So that's really the objective right now, is just helping our players showcase themselves and help them on to the next level. But, yeah, from a structural standpoint, and from, you know, opportunities, if we can control that environment for them at the next level, I think that's something that we're certainly entertaining and would make a lot of sense. So,
Don. I think it's interesting, like you mentioned about Helsingør and stuff like that, and this is probably not a conversation for the podcast, but just like in terms of business, you've got so many opportunities to do different things, and even different sports as well. Like in the future, like if you wanted to go down that route, but you want to see your wives and your kids and and stuff like that. I definitely resonate with that. I have Don who works me like a workhorse, basically. He obviously he's in California time as well. I'm in the UK at the minute and stuff like that. But no, that's interesting now and stuff. But I've got one quick question. In terms of the college recruitment from your players, let's talk about the college side of things. Like how many players go on to actually play in college? From obviously it's down to them. You can't control academics and desire and stuff like that. But just interested to know how many go on to play college.
Well, I mean, I would say it's probably 98% to 99% go on to university.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The only, you know, 1% who don't end up going back home just to go to school at home. You know, last year we had 3 players from Sweden who came on the premise that they would do 1 year as a learning exchange, and they got a lot of attention. You know, our goalkeeper was getting, you know, tracked by a couple Ivy League schools and some Patriot League schools who were really excited about him. But he's like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to go back home. I just want to come work on my English or what have you. So
then what's he doing in Sweden now?
He's playing for a pro club back in Stockholm. And we'll go to the University of Stockholm.
So. Oh, all right. Okay. I was going to say, like,
yeah, I mean, you know, and again, it's hard. It's a hard sell necessarily. I mean, you know, for the kids in the UK, especially in Scandinavia, you go to school for free, healthcare is free, everything's free. And they're like, oh yeah, come to the US and pay, you know, $50,000 a year to go to high school. Like, yeah, I'm good. So.
Yeah. Well, it's like Jack Harrison thing. Like, obviously I keep mentioning him before, it was before you joined, but I know his story and everything about him pretty well. And like he was with you guys, and I think he played in Florida, and a contact got him in the Bradford City in England U18s, right. And just like they watched him for 13 minutes or whatever, and like, nah, not good enough for us. Yeah. Bradford City U13s, and then it was funny, like, that was in like July or whatever, and then I was in the convention center. I can't remember which city it was in for the draft. And it was like, I kind of forgot about Jack in a way. It sounds really bad. But then it was like, number one pick, Jack Harrison. I was like, what? So anyway, I was, my office was next to the owner's office of Bradford City. And I told him, I said, see that kid there? You had him for free. This is a couple of years after, actually. Manchester City had bought him by this point. And I was just like, you could have had him for free. And anyway, this guy was not happy with the youth team staff and stuff like that. Obviously, football, soccer is all opinionated and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just it's interesting the type of players you are getting, because, like you said before, the US is the only place in the world which kind of offers that education and the football. I'm not going to start going into a pitch or anything like that. But at the minute, that's where it is. And that's why you're in a good position to kind of bring in the younger ones, which I do believe will happen more and more and more. Like, younger players want to get out there just to miss kind of the 2 years of high school maybe in their countries and kind of get ahead of the game. And because, for example, yourselves, you've got a lot of, well, you've got a good network. Because one of my questions really was going to be like, how do all these schools, apart from, like, I know you use like an online platform, but how do they actually get seen by all these schools? But you're playing in all these showcases and you've got a good reputation now. You'll get a phone call from somebody, like, say, Mike Noonan, for example. He knows you, and he'll ask you who's good to watch, for example.
Yeah,
like, that's just how it is. It's all networking.
Absolutely.
There's no real structure there with it.
We had an indoor showcase last weekend. We had 50 college coaches there, and you know, Stanford's out sniffing around now, you know, because we have a kid there, so they know the brand. And you know, Notre Dame was there. Michigan has two of our kids. You know, so the as far as we're concerned, you know, what we would regard as, you know, some of the best teams in the country know us, or either because they have a player or they know the quality of kids that we're producing. So
how did Stanford get the player? I forgot his
Osani?
Name.
Apologize. Osani Buda. Yeah. Well, I guess one of the things that it didn't happen by chance, but we were fortunate to benefit from the Right to Dream Academy. Do you guys know them?
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, they were Norshland.
Well, yeah, right, yeah. So Right to Dream is Man City's academy. It's based in Ghana.
Oh, sorry, that's the one. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah. It's all connected to Sweden and stuff.
Yeah, the same guy. Norshland is their pro club.
And oh, apologize. So, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on. I'm not helping this.
It's okay. Yeah. So Right to Dream, basically, you know, they scout something like 10,000 kids a year and bring in like 12 or 14 of them. At U9 or U10, and then at 14, they decide, okay, you're going to go the pro route and stay with us until 18, and then you sign with Norshland, or you're going to America to go the educational route. And so their executive director from the U.S. is based in New York City, and so he puts them into residential boarding schools within, you know, I think 4 hours drive of New York City, just so we can keep them close and check in on them. So we've benefited from a relationship with Right to Dream, and that I think we're on to 14 or 15 kids who have come through our program, just because their schools are affiliated with us. So Osani Buda wasn't someone we recruited, but he did play for us during his time at Millbrook School, which is one of our partner schools. So we can say that we played a part in his development, but he's a pretty special player, in my opinion.
And what's going to happen with him, you think?
It's a good question. You know, there were some agents that we were talking to who thought, and again, I don't know how all this works, but they valued him at like $3 million going into his freshman year at Stanford, and decided if he had a good year, he could push it up to $8 or $10 million.
Oh, wow.
So he could sign a pro contract in Europe, I think, is still, you know, he could end up in Europe somewhere. So. I'm not sure. I mean, I think there's a chance he could sign a pro contract before next year, or, you know, I think, you know, Jeremy obviously likes him a lot, so he could, you know, do another year at least. I don't know. I mean, Stanford is a pretty prestigious school, so I think he wants to graduate and get his degree. But, you know, if a life-changing opportunity comes to play at the pro level, I think he'd certainly considered it. But the other thing about Osani, if you don't know, he's one of the nicest, most genuine kids you've ever met. Like, super humble, very coachable, you know, like great teammate, you know, great guy in the locker room. So we're really happy for all the successes that he's had, and I'm sure it's something that's going to work out for him.
I'm sure that you need to get in the agency game by the sound of it. I'm just signing up for the English Football Association one right now. Like, you're giving me the inside tips. That's cool though. Carry on.
Most of the kids that you're talking about are from English speaking countries. I mean, even, you know, Nigeria, it's an English speaking country. So what about kids from non-English speaking countries?
As far as what do we do for them, or?
Yeah. So if you get a kid, from South America or Central America, yeah. or maybe even, you know, I don't know if you do, how much you deal in Asia. You mentioned Hong Kong, but you know, if they're from like Korea or something like that, mm-hmm. it could be a difficult, at least first year transition. My experience is that once kids get in, within a year, they're pretty much caught up to speed. But
yeah,
do you deal with non-English speaking countries?
We do. Yeah, we work with many. John was just on a tour with one of our scouts through South America just before the winter break there. So they did five countries. They're in Brazil, Guatemala, Colombia, Chile, and Ecuador. And so I guess, you know, again, our vetting process obviously involves football and measuring all those things, but there is an application process. It's not as rigorous as the college process, and the standards for testing aren't as rigorous, which would, it makes for an easier pathway for kids who are keen to come. So we do TOEFL testing. I think they still do that at the college level as well. So there's a range of scores that they would need to be within from on their TOEFL testing. And then all the schools that we work with, at least for our residential academies, they offer ESL. So you can get additional tutoring for ESL. So, but you're right, you know, the kids that come, even, you know, if their language is, we very rarely take kids who don't speak any English, but if their English is limited, you know, by the time they get to Thanksgiving or even winter break, they're usually more comfortable and it's coming along. So we actually have two players from Hong Kong that I brought in. One's English was advanced, the other one was not advanced. And I just saw them a couple of weeks ago. They're like, "Hey coach, how's it going? Good to see you. How's everything?" So they're coming along. So again, as a factor when thinking about, you know, players to bring in, if they're going to be a 4-year kid with us, it's much easier to bring a player in whose English isn't advanced, as opposed to a sophomore or junior where you're a bit more limited with time for them to adapt. So, it's a defining factor for sure. But you know, I think what's an interesting phenomenon for us is that all the agencies that we work with internationally started exclusively in placing, you know, players in the college game. And you know, Chris, you mentioned it before, it's a real challenge to get a kid at 18 or 19 who's taking the SAT for the first time with no mentoring or very limited prep, whether it's a class or a tutor or what have you, and find them a place that's going to be a great fit. And, I think, again, being in my own experience, there's players that I came up with who came home after a semester or a year. I was like, it was horrible. The classes were horrible. The team wasn't great. And, you know, I think some part of that is they didn't do their homework in understanding the school, the environments they're going into. But the other is that they didn't have access to, you know, what the Americans kids have, whether it's SAT or ACT prep and, you know, essay writing and everything else. It's such an advantage for the American kids. So all of the agencies that we work with have now shifted their business models to working with kids at younger ages because, you know, like I said, the pathway is a little bit easier. The schools are a little bit more liberal with their policies, whether it's language or, you know, SSAT testing or what have you. And so they can find themselves here with sort of more opportunity. And I think their access to universities after that experience is much broader. And so So it makes a lot of sense for them to go that way.
Yeah, well, we struggle with the like I was saying before this phone call, before this podcast recording, like we just struggle. We get a ton of good players, but it's just like, I wish you came to us at like 15 years old. We've actually started like going in like really like a lot younger as well. Like you said, most people do by the sounds of it. And just because we need them to have the education side of it. And the guys who come from professional clubs, they're usually the worst ones, like, because obviously they have just the mindset, I'm turning professional, especially European kids, professional, and obviously the odds are against them. And then if you get a kid who's very good at the football, but then they've got good academics as well, it's like gold mine. I'm like, I don't believe it sometimes. I'm like, wow. Like, they're the ones that we jump on and everyone wants. But yeah. So, I mean, we'll start to wrap up then. But I mean, is there anything, like, Tony, is there anything that you want to do with your career? Obviously, I'm not trying to tout you away from your job right now, but is there anything you want to achieve, like, personally with yourselves?
Honestly, it's a dream for me to even be involved in this project, to be honest with you. You know, Don and I were talking before, you know, I spent 18 years in the college game, you know, obviously exclusively at Division III. But I think, you know, and I talk to coaches almost every day. I live with a coach, fortunately. So she tells me about all of her trials and tribulations every day with her team. And I always tell her I'm the last person you should be talking to about this. But I think that, you know, the role of the coach has changed. I think, you know, kids generally, their mentality is a little bit different. I honestly think, you know, the podcast you're on with Dan previously is talking about, you know, effective coaching for the, you know, 21st century. I think, you know, my approach to coaching was a little dated just based on my experiences and not as effective as it could have been just, you know, in the communities I was in or in the environments I was in. So I think, you know, for me, the opportunity to work with kids at this age, you know, I identified with the, you know, their experiences based on my own, you know, sort of being at, you know, the national level of Canada. And my friend Jay, who works for the union, always jokes that every kid in Canada plays for the national team, but
it's true, right?
It's pretty true. Yeah. I think this project, and again, you're providing life, what could be transformative, life-changing opportunities for kids, is exactly where I want to be right now. We get the opportunity to, you know, in essence, handpick the kids that we want to work with who, you know, are just tremendous kids who are just looking for an opportunity. And, you know, while the U.S. isn't the country I was born in, I'm so appreciative of the opportunities it's provided for me and what it can do in changing a kid's life. And so, you know, I've never worked harder, but I've never been happier. And so, you know, to me, it's just about what are we doing next to help BlackRock grow and to help more kids. And so, I couldn't see myself doing anything differently, but at the moment, you know, like I said, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. I mean, Don, do you want to finish on anything at all?
No, I love your model. I'll give you guys a little pat on the back for what I see. We had a few buddies of mine that we talked about this 25 years ago about building this kind of a model. It's a true club model, isn't it? And I think that's what's so exciting about what you've done. You guys have figured out a way to pull off a full club model from youth on into upper level youth on into the pro game. And it certainly sounds like you guys have got plans to continue to possibly expand. And I'll just say congratulations. Do you have any plugs or anything that you'd like our listeners to know about or anything like that?
Nothing I can say off the top of my head as far as plugs. I mean, obviously we're on social media, so if anybody's interested in, you know, kind of what we're up to or what our players are up to, that's a great resource. I would say Instagram's probably the most up to date or probably the most compelling as far as stories to tell.
Are you active online, Tony? Why do you plug yourself a little bit?
I am, but it's more pictures of my daughter skiing and, you know, things like that. So it's not that interesting, but I will say that, you know, our girls academy is one that we are excited about and really looking to grow. So if there's, you know, female aged high schoolers out there who have a passion for the game, and looking for opportunity. That's definitely one that we would love to have a conversation about. It's our first play in the girls. We have 40 girls in our prep academy amongst our partner schools that we're excited about. One's heading off to UConn next year. Another one's going to be at Tennessee. A couple of kids who will be in the NESCAC, which are, you know, small Ivies. So we're having a lot of success with the kids that we're working with. But our first residential model is for the girls is pretty unique. And we're excited about the kids we have, but we really want to grow that out. So I would definitely say if anybody's interested in discussing that, we'd love to entertain that for sure. So
awesome. Well, Tony, thank you. Thank you for your time and everything and all the information and your knowledge. It's like I say, if anyone wants to reach out to you, they can find you on, I know you're on LinkedIn. That's how we primarily connected and stuff like that. So yeah. Any questions at all? I mean, have you got an email address?
Yeah.
Sorry.
dmuhammad@blackrockfc.org. Yeah. If you go to blackrockfc.org, you can find my profile and information.
Blackrockfc.org. Perfect. All right. Thank you. And that's a wrap. Thank you, guys.